strange thing. That is, you know, there's not rhetoric that we expect to hear post-World War II in Northern Europe. But we're hearing it now.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange speaking inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he's taken refuge for the past 3 years. If he steps outside the embassy, he'll be arrested. To watch part one of our exclusive interview, visit democracynow.org, where he talks about leaked drafts of the TPP, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the recent disclosures of a British nuclear submarine whistleblower who says it's harder to get through airport security than to get onto a Trident nuclear weapons submarine. And Assange talks about secret details of a European Union plan to use military force, in other words, blowing ships up, to curb the influx of migrants from Libya. That does it for our show. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan, Hani Massoud, Mike Burr, Sam Alcoff, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Brendan Allen, Julie Crosby, Neil Shabata, and our London crew, Pablo Gargiulo, Jamie Goodbrand, and Izzy Montero. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with guest host Dave Mazza. Today's guest is the executive director of Street Roots, Israel Bayer, and we'll talk about the state of homelessness in Portland today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Improvisation Summit of Portland, June 4th through 6th at Disjecta in Portland. This all-ages event brings together musicians, dancers, and experimental performers for 3 days of improvisational art. Performers include Roscoe Mitchell, Jonah Parzan Johnson, Linda Austin, Gordon Ashworth, Either Neither, and many, many more. Again, that's the Improvisation Summit of Portland, Thursday, June 4th through June 6th at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Voices from the Edge, and I'm Dave Mazza. Joanne will be back next week. Well, we're going to talk this morning about what's happening in a number of locations around our city this morning, and has been going on now for a couple of days. As you know, this is Rose Festival week, people coming in from all over the state and elsewhere to enjoy the festivities, and there's one other tradition to the Rose Festival. That is the Portland police generally begin sweeping homeless encampments throughout the area to ensure the tourists aren't frightened by people that they somehow don't feel should be in there. So we've seen what's happened is starting Tuesday, the Portland police began what they don't want to call a sweep. They're calling it outreach, education, and enforcement. But the results are kind of pretty much the same, and as much that officers are coming in, particularly in those areas along the East Side Esplanade, down along NATO Parkway, and some of the other places that tend to be kind of prime real estate for the homeless, in that they are areas where people can set up their camps, where they're not going to be directly in the way, where they have some access to services. Unfortunately, they tend to be fairly visible, hence the police action. And this is, again, like I say, a tradition we see every year, and of course these sweeps occur more than just once a year, but particularly as we get into the summer months and people are coming into town and people are outside, the businesses really crank up the complaints. This particular education and outreach effort is really no different, in as much as the police and the Portland Business Association began quite early cranking up their complaint machine. We began hearing about supposedly dangerous situations on the East Side Esplanade. So I'm going to spend the next hour talking about this police sweep and the broader issue of where Portland is on dealing with the homeless. We are scheduled to have Street Roots Executive Director Israel Baer here, and I'm thinking Israel is caught up in traffic, hopefully not caught up in one in the sweep. He was down there the last couple of days observing what's been going on. I'm sure he'll be joining us shortly. But in the meantime, let's move forward with the conversation. And as always, you can join us at 503-231-8187. We're particularly interested in hearing this morning from folks who may have observed the police in action over the last couple of days, or, you know someone who's been on the receiving end of this education and outreach process. But we also like to talk, like I say, about the kind of the bigger picture, because, you know, Portland's not unique. We're seeing more and more cities adopt these aggressive policies across the nation, and actually, you know, globally, as more and more people become homeless, losing their homes, are left adrift with no jobs, or some of them even do have jobs and are homeless. But at any rate, this is a growing population, and it seems that cities, including Portland, only have one little tool in their toolbox, which is we bring the police out and we drive these people out. So there's got to be a better way, I think, but apparently the Portland City Council has been unable to find that better way. Now, this current sweep, as I say, which is being touted as education and outreach and services, outreach, education, and enforcement, is purportedly going to be looking at two forms of encampments, the heavily encamped one or entrenched camper, and then those who are, you know, apparently unentrenched, whatever that might mean in terms of the police. I think we're really talking about those folks who have settled in quite a bit, are entrenched. And if you go down to the East Industrial District, you know, people are living down there. So yes, they are, I guess, entrenched, in as much as I'm entrenched in my home and you're entrenched in your home. Those apparently are going to be the primary targets. But regardless, even if you aren't immediately in the police scope for these things, it has a chilling effect, knowing that you may, you know, wake up the next morning with the police officers, even perhaps politely, but still asking you to pack up and move. Well, we're going to, before I keep going on here, we're going to go to the phone. We have Joanne on the line. Good morning, Joanne.
Yeah, thanks for the program. I've been buying Street Roots for years, and you don't have to answer this one. Is Alan Graf coming back to Oregon for a visit? And also, what was the other thing? Oh, I can't remember. I don't know if I'll have the energy to call back, but I would like to ask this editor a couple of questions. One is, I saw a rent control thing on a pole, a meeting about rent control on a pole in Southeast Portland. I want to know if he knows anything about it. And also, does he support a privatization of public housing? And also, I want to say we're not considered people. We're considered collateral damage. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Joanne. And those are all good questions, which we will pose to Israel when he arrives. I haven't heard anything. I mean, I know that the idea of rent control has been something that's been out there for, you know, off and on for years, because high rents actually aren't an unusual situation in Portland. People have been getting priced out of rentals in the core of the city and increasingly outwards towards the fringes more and more, well, for 30 years. So we've certainly seen an acceleration of that phenomenon in the last few years, or last 10 years particular. So, there's a need for rent control, I would say, since the average family can't afford to rent a house here in Portland. But if we find out anything about that, we'll get that out there to you. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Harry on the line. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
During the sweep right now, they're sweeping people out of these areas where they're living, and they have really no place to go. During the 1930s, during the Great Depression, Portland and Multnomah County had 8 tent cities. We only, right now, we only have 2, and both of them have a 30-day waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no place for them to go. I suggest that we probably should have more tent cities here in Portland for them to go to, something that's patrolled and some place where they can go.
Well, and as you know, Right to Dream 2 has been trying to work with the city and with local businesses to find a new location that would allow them to expand capacity. But the key is, of course, finding a place that's actually accessible. Dignity Village is, you know, a success. However, Dignity Village is kind of on the dark side of the moon in terms of it being accessible to a lot of people who are in that situation and who need the services. You know, it's a long bus ride from the leaf recycling area where Dignity Village is located to, you know, the social services downtown or on the close-in east side. So that's the trouble. I agree. We need more spaces. However, as you know, the mayor is not particularly showing any movement about the idea of more encampments. They want to get people into shelters.
But are those shelters available, though?
Well, no. I mean, there's not enough. And the question is, what's the quality of the shelters in terms of, are they capable of dealing with, you know, a variety of types of people coming in? I mean, for one, we know that there's not enough women shelters compared to men shelters. Granted, more men are homeless than women. They're not really that well equipped to take in couples or families. So, I mean, I think there's a whole lot of issues there. You know, the shelter system, I think, is still largely operating under the old model that homeless consisted of that small margin of males, primarily males, who are, you know, sort of always found in cities, and not recognizing the vast swelling of the ranks of the homeless thanks to, you know, our wonderful economic system.
Yeah, some of the homeless out there are people who are disabled, and they're waiting for their Social Security to have their hearing, and since they can't work, they can't pay rent, so they're mm-hmm. homeless. And there's a lot of vets out there, too, the same thing. They're waiting for their veterans' benefits, and they're out on the street, so maybe having several more tent cities, you know, maybe a tent city for women, a tent city for women and children, or something like that, would probably ease things.
Well, I think that sounds extremely rational. Unfortunately, that's not where our mayor is at, and apparently the city council hasn't been that way either. I think largely because, you know, the Portland Business Alliance and certain, you know, a lot of the neighborhood associations and others are really, really push hard when we begin talking about expanding encampments, and, you know, and we still kind of stuck with the, you know, the anti-camping mode here in Portland. So if we can clear that hurdle, we could certainly begin developing things along those lines.
Okay, hey, thank you for taking my comment and question.
Well, thanks for your questions. They're very good. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza, and Joanne will be back next week. We are talking about the situation, the homeless situation here in Portland, because this week the Portland police are conducting what they call, I believe it's outreach, education, and enforcement. I'll get those three words down right, rather than a sweep. This is the kinder, gentler approach of uprooting the already uprooted. And it's been started on Tuesday, and it's continuing on. They're targeting what they call the entrenched areas, which are, I think, primarily around the Esplanade, East Industrial Area, and then, you know, along NATO Parkway, which just happens to coincide with visibility issues for tourists coming into town around Rose Festival. So who knows? Anyway, if you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We have Barry on the line. Good morning, Barry.
Dave, hi. I missed talking with Paul during his show yesterday, but I didn't miss this. I've tried to come on to the city council on Wednesdays. I've been there, but I've only spoken to the mayor and the city commissioners once, and it was just deadness. They wouldn't speak with me or anything. They wouldn't reply to me or anything. There are three city blocks in back of the old Washington High School, and they could be made into an encampment. I've seen that happen before, and that worked, and that is history now. It's just when the Department of Transportation wanted their space back, it was a first or second dignity village. There were about 55 people in this area catacornered to St. Patrick's Church, and I'd come to service about during the evening, Saturday evenings, and mm-hmm. I'd pick up around the Dignity Village there and get into the service, and I'd feel real good about it, and that was great, and it worked. But yet the Department of Transportation owned the area. They wanted a place to put their rakes, hose, and tools, and all hoses and all that stuff, and they forced everybody out. Father Mayo of St. Patrick's Church put forth, I think, about $40,000 for outhouses, for garbage, for water, that took care of everything. And I don't know how long that would have been, that everything would have been taken care of. But again, the Department of Transportation owned the land and forced them out. You see?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And in fact, those areas around Washington, the old Washington High School, is also one of the entrenched areas that they mentioned in their announcement.
What do you mean entrenched?
Well, I think what the police are saying when they say entrenched, I think that means, you know, it's a more stable collection of people living there. I mean, it's a more stable settlement. It's probably, you know, folks are settled in with their tents and their stuff, and they've been there for a while, you know, because it's a good spot. Yes. In other words, they're trying to enjoy a somewhat normal life under the circumstances, and that's the ones they're getting targeted. So
yes, if I could add to your what you're saying, the people have been living along 12th, and especially up by St. Francis Church for a long time. They've lived there on the sidewalk, and then the people down by Washington High School live in back of the fence that's around the three city blocks. But you see, this place is different. That was owned by the Department of Transportation. There's something different about this place that could be used for an encampment, and that is that the city of Portland owns that land.
Uh-huh.
Commissioner Fritz's office, if anybody could hear this now, I'm sure many people are listening, call Commissioner Fritz and even Mayor Hales. There's a number, 823-4000, and call to ask for either one of those. Ask, is this possible to use this space, and if so, why not? Commissioner Fish had introduced me to it, and he said, well, we've considered it, and I spoke with somebody with a Portland Housing or something like that tried to get an order to use it, zoning order, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. She explained how going around to all the neighbors asking them and stuff, may we please use this? Well, now there is something in the rules and regulations of the Portland Development Commission, of their zoning. There's such a thing as emergency zoning, and when people are camped along the sidewalks and stuff, and you try to get people out, tell them that you can't camp here anymore and they don't have a place to go, that would be a situation of emergency. And this is exactly what's in the structure of law of the Portland Development Commission. There's such a thing as emergency zoning that can be used to attain those three blocks for an encampment. That can be done.
Wow. Well, that's you know, incredible that we have sort of something of a, you know, well, not a complete solution, but we certainly have something that would go a long ways to relieving the pressure on homeless people, and yet the city council remains actionless. Barry, you've provided with a lot of great information. Really appreciated. Good questions. I'm going to have to move on because our guest has actually called in. So...
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mazza. Thank you very much, Dave, for what you're doing. And there is an answer to this. You understand?
I agree with you. I agree with you, too, Barry. You take care now, okay?
Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Well, I understand that we have our guest on the phone, so we're going to go back to the phone lines.
Hello?
Hey, Israel.
Thank you. I apologize for being late. I had a family emergency this morning, and I do apologize.
Oh, no, no problem. I hope everything is going okay. We were thinking, wow, did he get caught up in the sweep?
No.
So, Israel Beyer, Executive Director of Streets Roots. You've been down on Tuesday when the sweep started. Kind of give us your take on what's been going on.
Well, you know, these sweeps are a part of really an annual occurrence that happens typically right before Rose Festival and the Fleet Week.
Mm-hmm.
Campers on the Inner East Side, you know, typically in the winter are considered low barrier campers and typically don't get are allowed to be there. And so, you know, part of this is what the police say is a critical mass of people who are camping on the Inner East Side, but ultimately it's really a part of the first set of sweeps that will occur throughout the summer months.
Wow. So there's going to be just kind of a rolling thing going on here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it's fascinating to me that every year we have this conversation and every year, you know, the media covers it as if it was the first time that it had ever happened. And, you know, it's pretty typical schedule that, you know, downtown Inner East Side is swept prior to the Rose Festival. In July, we'll hear a lot about homeless boaters because then that will be the 4th of July and yeah. Blues Festival on the river.
Yeah.
You know, I like to joke by August we'll be overrun by street kids. So it is a pretty typical cycle. You know, I think that there are some good things happening on the housing front, but unfortunately this is a sad reality that continues to take place when you don't have a solution to the problem at hand, which is, you know, ultimately finding housing for people.
Right. Which I want to talk about a little bit here, but first, you know, I'm curious because the police have been really pushing hard on the fact that this is outreach, education, and enforcement, that it's not the sweeping in there and just knocking aside tents, and that this is, you know, much more like a humanitarian mission.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. I do think that the police, in many cases, allow people to camp what they call low barrier camping throughout the city.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, if you take care of your camp, you clean up your trash, you you know, are a steward of the land, so to speak, typically they let folks be. Saying that, in these cases, you know, it's ultimately, you know, they're getting people, dispersing people, and people, unfortunately, are dispersed into the neighborhoods all over the city. It becomes a real hardship for people to find a new place to locate. You know, there are the mayor's office and Deborah Cafori, Multnomah County Chair, are increasing their support for housing services. At the same time, you know, I think it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors to say that the camps specifically are about finding permanent housing for people, understanding that there's no housing available currently for those people to go to. So I think that to say that it's about helping people, I think that's probably a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, and how long have we been saying housing's not available for people? We keep saying we need more housing so that we can provide the homeless with, you know, permanent shelter, which goes a long ways to getting them to stabilize their lives. But, you know, it seems to me I've been hearing this refrain for about 20 years at least.
Yeah. You know, we're smack dab in the middle of a cycle of homelessness that has been occurring since the 1980s. And, you know, since that time, the federal government has defunded housing by the tens of billions of dollars. And what typically was a federal issue has now become a local issue. And so local communities throughout the country are forced to basically carry the water for the lack of federal funding that's typically gone into housing. We're 30 years into that, and different communities have prioritized that in different ways. So, you know, I would say Portland is middle of the pack in the context of compassion, being able to, I like to say that, you know, we're holding our thumb in a dike, just managing the problem. And, you know, I think it's time for our community specifically to find a long-term revenue resource specifically for housing. And so we're one of the few communities in the United States that doesn't have a dedicated funding stream that goes specifically to housing. You know, in Seattle, they have a levy. In San Francisco, they have a huge bond. In Miami, they have a restaurant tax. So there are examples around the country about how we can create more of a revenue to then support housing. You know, right now, we're an estimated 20,000 units short of affordable housing units for people experiencing poverty, and that doesn't even take into consideration the housing affordability crisis that all of a sudden the middle class in our community are now facing.
Right. So do you think that we have here the support for getting a levy passed or a restaurant tax passed? Or
Well, you know, there's the newly formed Welcome Home Coalition, and that coalition's sole mission is to work on a long-term revenue source. So I think that there are a lot of things being explored, whether that is something that we ask the taxpayers to support, or whether that's something that could be an industry-led fee, I think is still being explored. I think that there's no question that regardless of where you fall on the subject matter, whether it's from a practical standpoint, a business standpoint, a compassionate standpoint, that ultimately something has to be done about the housing crisis in our community. And I think it's figuring out what exactly that is. And I think over the next year, you'll see some more of that come to fruition.
Well, I'm talking with Israel Bayer. He's the executive director of Street Roots. We're talking about the sweep that started on Tuesday of the homeless encampments, as well as the broader issue of homelessness in Portland, an issue that our city council just doesn't seem to be able to get its hands around or doesn't want to get its hands around. You want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we have James on the line. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
What's your... Go ahead.
Well, I don't really have a... I don't know. I guess it's not... Maybe there's a question in it somewhere, but I guess more it's more of an observation. I see the city not really wanting to do much about the homelessness. I mean, it just seems like... I feel like there's a lot of people who are content with just kicking around homeless people, honestly. Like, if they, I mean, think about all of the construction that's been going on. I mean, just in my neighborhood, I live in the, like, kind of South Tabor area, and I've noticed that they have knocked down a bunch of older houses, but they keep replacing them with these, like, these little row homes. And I could guarantee you that each of those houses is going to go for the same price that the one house was knocked down for. And it's like they're creating, I mean, there's almost an overcrowding with the amount of housing that they're building, but they're only giving it to people who supposedly, you know, have money. But it's like, even then, with our local economy, there's hardly enough money to go around. So it's like, who are they building these houses for? And why can't we start building, you know, some of these huge condos that they want to build, but put homeless people in them?
Well, you know? I think that's a good question to put to the mayor and the city council.
Yeah, because, I mean, just honestly, like, I don't care that we're building more housing. What I care about is that people who need housing are getting housing. And, I mean, it's like he said, it's just like they have their thumb in the dike right now. And when that thing cracks, it is going to be ugly. Because I believe that the thumb in that dike is also a part of what's keeping the Portland bubble together. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's only going to be a problem when the people who are in over their heads with the housing that they have that's built purely on sentimental value is going to burst probably about the same time this whole housing dike is going to burst. And it just, I don't know. It's just frustrating because, I mean, I was homeless for a couple years. And, you know, and luckily, I mean, I've lived a pretty blessed life, even though I was houseless. I had people who were willing to take me in for a time or two, but I spent a lot of time sleeping outside, you know, and it's just, you know, and I mean, I'm more determined than most folks, I guess. I figured it out. But, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people out there who need help, and maybe they can't figure it out on their own. You know, we tout ourselves as being so progressive here in this city, but what I see is just a lot of, like, neoconservatism wrapped up in organic tortillas and rice paper. You know what I mean? It's just, you know.
No, I'm in full agreement, James. I think that, you know, yeah. Portland touts itself as being weird and out there and on the edge, and I think, you know, it's all very type of channeled activities that ensure that we don't actually get down to the nugget of the real, you know, the real issues, and that we really push hard and get angry. So,
exactly, yeah, exactly. So, that is right on. I want to see people living well. I want to see people happy, and it's not going to happen if we keep pretending that this is a vacuum issue, and that all these people on the streets are just a bunch of druggies with, you know, like they're mm-hmm. like they're a bunch of husks of human beings,
right?
You know,
yeah. And one of the complexities of all of it is, you know, the Portland specifically, or Multnomah County, houses a significant amount of people every year. We just can't keep pace with the amount of people who end up on the street. So poverty has reached a critical mass, and so it's hard to show a success story when you're constantly seeing visibly thousands of people on the street. And, you know, to comment on what you said about the apartment buildings, you know, Oregon is one of two states, the other being Texas, which is it's never a good company to be in when you're the other state of Texas. But we don't have inclusionary zoning, and inclusionary zoning would allow the city to create a requirement that when development is created, there is a quota of affordable housing that has to be built within through development. And if you don't build it, then a developer has to basically pay into a housing trust fund. And so that basically creates a dynamic that as your city grows, as you become dense, as the developers and, you know, folks make money hand over fist, that there is at least a requirement in there that says you have to build X amount of affordable housing. Currently, we don't have that in Oregon. And in fact, it's banned in the state constitution, like many things are banned. And it's working its way through the Oregon legislation, our legislature right now. And we're hoping with the leadership of Tina Kotek that at the end of this legislative session, that ban will be lifted and local communities will actually start to be able to work on policies that force developers to either pony up some money to support housing or to build affordable housing within their units. So right now it's a free-for-all. Developers can build to the sky and as much as they want, and there's no affordable housing requirements in there.
Israel, did you have a house bill bill number for that bill?
I can look that up and then swing back to you.
Okay, we'll get that out there so folks can call their lawmakers and put a little pressure on them, because that is just, you know, I agree. Anytime you say Oregon and Texas, you know, that's not good news. So, well, James, we're going to have to move on because we're going to get other callers here, but thank you for your calling in with your great questions. We're talking with Israel Baer, who is the executive director of Street Roots. We're talking about the police sweep that's going on this week, as well as the larger picture of homelessness in Portland and why our city doesn't seem to be willing or able to grapple with that. Before we go back to the phone lines, I want to remind you why you need to stay tuned to KBOO this morning. At 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, hosted by Teresa Mitchell. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We will hear the full hour of Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Lisa Loving speaks with Cole Cohen about her new book, Headcase, My Brain and Other Wonders, a memoir about their struggle, about her struggle to make her way and set up a life after doctors discovered a hole in her brain the size of a lemon. Ouch. At 11:30, it's The Film Show, featuring news and interviews about the independent film scene in Portland. And thanks, KBOO members, for your support during our recent membership drive. If you missed it, you can still contribute by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today and avoiding a guilty conscience that will drive you crazy until you do that. So get online. Go ahead and donate. Support KBOO. Well, again, we're talking with Israel Baer. If you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we have Francis on the line. Good morning, Francis.
Hi.
Hi.
I was very happy to hear just now about this law that is being attempted in the legislature right now. And if you do find out the number of it for the inclusionary laws, I would appreciate getting that.
Yeah, I do have that. It's House Bill 2564.
All right.
2564. Thank you.
House Bill
2564. You know, in Utah, right now, I've heard of something very fascinating where somehow they've managed to get it to where they provide housing, apartments to people who are homeless, with regardless of what their situation is, mentally, on drugs, or whatever. They provide the housing and then take it from there as far as what kind of treatment people may need or whatever their situation is dealt with. And if somebody falls off the wagon or whatever, they don't lose their home. And that's what usually happens in Portland. If you're in a program, most of the housing downtown is a program, and you have to be involved in the program in order to maintain your home, your SRO unit or whatever it is. But in Utah, it's just the opposite. You have the home first, and then we work on whatever your issues are. And it seems to have been very successful, and apparently it's been quite cost-effective. So I'm going to look more into that because it sounds like...
Right. We've actually...
A truly progressive approach rather than a pretend progressive approach.
Yeah. Israel and I actually had a conversation before the show about that because they're also doing the same thing in Santa Clara County. Home of Silicon Valley. What do you think of that program, Israel?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on. So I think the housing first model is something that has been adopted in some areas of Portland. And the idea, you know, it used to be from the 80s until the current time that you would have to, you know, you might have to get sober or jump through a bunch of hoops before you got into housing. And the idea
or if you have a drink, you get kicked out, you know, one or the other.
Right,
I mean, that's not the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, but now the housing first model is taking a hold, and it is a great, great model. I think that there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors in Utah and in Santa Clara where they are being successful at housing people through this model, but you know, there's a little bit of public relations spin put on that stuff. You know, anytime
that's
you create a plan that says we're going to house a group of people, they may be housing a subpopulation of people experiencing homelessness, but it doesn't mean that they're actually tackling the overall problem. Saying that, it is a great program. There are many things we can learn from it. I think the big thing in Utah was that Republicans finally understood that housing people is actually cheaper than managing the problem and providing social services. And so
putting people in jail, it's more expensive to put somebody in jail than to provide housing for them.
And both Democrats and Republicans in Utah kind of had an aha moment when they realized that actually providing housing is cheaper than managing the problem. And I think that that's something that we have to come to a conclusion collectively in the United States to understand that regardless of where you might fall morally on an issue or whether you're left or right, ultimately it's a cost-saving measure and it's the right thing to do. So,
I have an observation of
schizophrenic
Portland. I know a couple people who are homeless, and one individual is right now staying, down on the waterfront on the NATO Park side of things. And when I went down there to visit them, I was amazed at how close and yet so far people are. These people were staying like right down there on the waterfront, north end, and there were people jogging and riding their bicycles who belonged to another, obviously a different class, and how close they were to each other in proximity, but how far they were as far as even communicating with each other was just amazing to me. And I'm curious now, as far as these sweeps are going, are they doing them in the middle of the night or in the mornings when people wake up or in the afternoons, or are they being any way compassionate about this, or how are they doing it?
They're typically doing it in the daytime, so they're not doing it in the middle of the night or anything. When you say compassionate, I think that's all perspective, and depending on...
So they hand them pamphlets or resources, or those little
Francis,
yellow books.
Let him answer the question. Okay, go ahead.
I think it's all relative, but I do think that the Portland police, do a fair job at enforcing laws that are marching orders from City Hall. So, oftentimes, the police have handled this public relations this week, which has been very fascinating to see, and they're enforcing the law, but these decisions don't just come from the police bureau. These decisions are made at a higher level. So,
right.
So, are they doing it compassionately? Yes, in the moment. Is it compassionate to be doing it? No. It's very complicated.
Right. Well, thank you, Francis.
Francis,
we got to move on. Francis, we have to move on. Thank you, though, for your question. All right. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza. And we're talking this morning with Israel Baer, who is the executive director of Street Roots. We're talking specifically about the sweep that is currently going on in areas close in downtown, dealing with, the sweeps of homeless camps. The police are supposedly doing a kinder, gentler approach this time, doing outreach, education, and services. We don't know about that. But at any rate, we're talking with Israel about that, and as well as the bigger picture of what's going on in the situation with homelessness here in Portland, which we don't seem to grapple with or even want to really pay attention to if we can avoid it, as evidenced by one of our earlier callers talking about their response when they went to City Council to talk about it. If you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So, Israel, if we, what sort of dollar figures do you think we're talking about if the city wanted to, have to raise an independent revenue stream to do this? Are we talking like millions and millions and millions of dollars?
Or? Yeah. It's a heavy lift. The Welcome Home Coalition that Street Roots is a part of estimates that to really get to the heart of the problem, we're talking about an increase of about $50 million annually.
$50 million?
$50 million. That's right.
Okay.
That's getting into the area of the street fee, transportation. I find it ironic that the transportation conversation very much, in some ways, mirrors the housing conversation, and that the federal government has continued to slash federal programs that puts then the burden on local communities, and so. you know, you can be your own judge whether we should prioritize housing over transportation or whether there should be a melding of both of them in some way. But ultimately, the city has the same problem on its hands, understanding that they're getting less and less money from the feds, and they have to figure out how to solve this problem. So,
of course, again, to keep it in perspective, if one looks at the amount of construction going on in Portland, the amount of money that the Portland Development Commission and the city has given to developers for various projects and subsidies, I mean, we start getting kind of close to those sorts of numbers, don't we?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I do know that they're, if you've got money to play, then typically you're rewarded for that. And in a free market, it makes it very hard to be able to solve these problems without any kind of regulations when it comes to housing, and not just housing. I mean, I think that you have to look at this not as an issue that's on its own. I think the living wage increases, street rates is a huge component of the $15 hour minimum wage and even higher. All this stuff goes together, because if people aren't able to provide for themselves or their families, understanding that they don't have adequate jobs or health care or education, ultimately those are the things that lead to homelessness. And so, you know, it's not just creating more revenue for housing, but it's also increasing our living wage. It's making sure that everybody is on health care. It's everything. It's all connected. So if we're able to bring up one group of people, we can bring up all people through those different kinds of mechanisms.
But you know, the trouble is, Israel, that doesn't fit into a concise one-line hit on a re-election campaign literature. You know, we're a country that likes magic bullets, you know, and we don't want complexity.
Yep.
Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines, where we have BJ on the line. Good morning, BJ.
How many people are living homeless here? About approximately.
There are about 2,400 people that sleep outside after all of the shelters are full. If you add the shelters, you're talking about a number of about 4,000 people a night. And then over the course of the year, about 16,000 people in Multnomah County will experience homelessness for a brief time. So that kind of gives you the scale, too, to understand that a lot of people are experiencing homelessness, and our system is able to respond to an enormous amount of people who fall between the cracks, but we've reached a critical mass. And when you think about 2,400 people being on the streets after the shelters are full, that's not humane, and that creates real challenges.
Yes. Low-cost housing is offered in a lot of cities that I've lived in Washington and in California. Low-cost housing, and I was on a list myself for one, and they were very nice little units.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, yeah, go ahead.
No, there are a lot. We're in this conundrum because there's a lot of great, public-private partnerships. There's a lot of great nonprofits doing amazing work. There are a lot of people on the streets really doing everything they can. They're working, they're engaged, they're trying to pull themselves up from the situation that they're in. But ultimately, we just can't keep pace with the level of poverty that we're experiencing in the United States. I will say that it's not a Portland-specific problem. I think there's this idea that we're this great kind of mecca for homeless people. And, you know, all you have to do is travel up and down the I-5 corridor to understand that. I was just in San Diego and Los Angeles this past weekend, and, I mean, there are visibly homeless people in every city in America right now, and, you know, on the West Coast especially. So the housing crisis is a national problem. It's not just a Portland problem, but, I think we as Portlanders should respond to it in a healthy way.
Yes, indeed. That's a very critical change that just happened in the last, decade or so. And this is a prime target, Portland, for the construction corporations, big apartment buildings over six lots, 60 units to replace, and they zone them condos, so they're taxed on them, so it increases the tax revenue quite a bit. And you split it a lot into these two bowling alleys like they did next door to me, these bowling alley houses. You double the property tax. So the advertisement is, oh, Portland has low tax. And in essence, by the way, seven states have no sales tax.
All right, BJ, we're kind of straying off course here. We're talking about homelessness, but thank you for calling in with your question. And before I go back to the phone lines, Engineer Steve here has handed me a note. He wants to say... He does say, please remind folks that there is a Save the Reservoirs action today at 2 p.m. at City Hall, City Council Chambers. As you know, this has been a long, long struggle to attempt to stop the city from, you know, eradicating the historic reservoirs that are perfectly functional up there on Mount Tabor and replace them with a very expensive and questionable system. And this thing continues to lurch forward, you know, like something out of a horror film. So if you can make it, get down to City Hall, City Council Chambers at 2 p.m. today. And they really would like a really high turnout. Even if you're not going to testify, just sitting in the chambers has an effect. So keep that in mind. Well, we're talking with Israel Baer, Executive Director of Street Roots. We're talking about the homeless sweeps and homelessness in Portland. If you want to give us a call, we've got about 10 minutes left here, but we've got Joe on the line, okay? Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I heard yesterday on KABU that in this particular sweep, and I don't know if this is unique for this reason, but the police are confiscating people's bikes and people's dogs. Now, I don't want to sound naive about this. There may be a certain marginal percentage of homeless people that will steal bikes. There may be a certain marginal percentage of homeless people that will may be mentally infirm and will not treat their animals properly. But the confiscation of dogs is what particularly bothers me. I mean, this is traumatic for the animal and for the person. Now, what do they have to do to get the dogs back, and why are certain specific individuals... why are they having their dogs confiscated? And if some people are not having their dogs confiscated, why not? I mean, this is very troubling to me, and I'm wondering exactly what's going on here with this dog confiscation.
Okay.
I know that Animal Service is were present and are present throughout the week for the sweeps, but I have not heard of anybody specifically having their dog confiscated. Typically, they're there to make sure that that animals are registered, and typically they provide services that may need to happen, so whether that's shots or whatever that might be. If somebody did get their dog confiscated, I'm unaware of it. But on the stolen bikes, you know, the cycling community, a certain fringe factor of the cycling community has been very vocal against the homeless camps in the past few months. And, you know, it's a really hard and complex situation. Are there people, are stolen bikes ending up in homeless camps? Yes, but are homeless people bikers? Yes. So it's a really hard and complicated situation. I do think that demonizing... the homeless are an easy target, right? Their whole world is out there on display. And so I think the bicycle task force, the theft task force, and the cycling community, it's really easy to prey on the homeless when it's right there. So I'm not sure that that's the greatest use of resources that we have in our community, considering we're backdated on all kinds of very serious criminal cases. So... that's a matter of debate, but that's what I know about it.
Right. The bicycles generally are insured, so, you know, or they should be insured. So, yeah, let's...
Well, the dogs appear to be, if certain animals appear to be visibly let's say, ill or someone injured, walking with a limp or whatever. And I know it's not always possible for the homeless people to have their dogs treated by veterinarians pro bono. Are animal control people on the lookout for injured or ill animals that really, for the benefit of the animal, need to be confiscated? Now, that's a very sensitive issue. I don't like the idea of animals being confiscated, but in some severe circumstances, it might be necessary. What is the basic policy there with regard to these dogs?
Well, there. If readers are readers, if listeners, if anybody needs support with animal care, there are actually two or three organizations in Portland that do a phenomenal job at providing, you know, basic level rabies shots, worm shots, getting people our animals registered at the county, and you can call 211. At any time and find out what those organizations are. And there are resources that are available for animals in Portland for poor folk.
Well, Joe, I appreciate your call. We're going to have to move on because we're running low on time, and I want to squeeze this last caller in. And we have Dan on the line. Good morning, Dan. Dan? Well, it looks like Dan has moved on. Well, Israel, we've got just a couple of minutes here. Anything in particular? Well, first of all, I want to say congratulations on Street Roots going to weekly publication. That's a huge thing. Really great.
Yeah, it's been fantastic for vendors. You know, sales are up 60% for the vendors themselves, and it's really allowed people selling the newspaper to stabilize both their lives and their income week in and week out. And that's really great. You know, we're doing... I think the first few weeks we were running on adrenaline, and then we were like, oh my goodness, what did we do?
We're doing a weekly now.
we have to do this every week. But now I think, you know, we've settled in and we're in a groove, and we're trying to, we're a social justice newspaper. We care about a lot of issues that are connected to poverty, and we're all in this together. So it's just been great. So.
Yeah. I was going to say to folks listening that, you know, it's Street Roots is covering an array of issues. So it's really an incredible resource. So I encourage you to, you know, patronize that Street Roots distributor you probably see outside a grocery store or what have you. We're going to try to squeeze in Dan, who came back on the line. Good morning, Dan. Got to keep it short.
Yeah, I know this requires a short answer to an involved question. My interest is in mental illness and how the sweeps are dealing with the people who have. Are they taking along mental health professionals to deal with people that may be in crisis? And what is the effect of the sweeps on a person with a diagnosis of schizophrenia? That's all I got. Thanks.
Okay. Good question.
You know, I think that Project Respond is available. You know, the hard thing is social service workers who build relationships with people on the streets don't want to be institutionalized into a homeless sweep. So it's this fine balance between trying to be available and maintain a genuine relationship with people, but not be a part of a sweep, because I don't think that there's any nonprofit out there that would say that we think displacing people is the right solution. So it's a balancing act. In theory, there are resources, but it becomes very challenging.
Okay, well, it looks like we're just about running out of time here. Israel, any last words, what you would like people to go away with in terms of what should they be doing right now in order to help move this issue forward in the right direction?
You know, I think if people can contact their legislators, their city council folks, the mayor, Multnomah County, and just simply say, please prioritize housing. It's a simple message, but it's a needed message that we have to, as a community, tackle this problem, and we encourage you at every point you can to advocate for that. So,
and I would also say people should support Street Roots. Get out there,
absolutely,
buy those papers, make a donation. Great organization. Israel Bear, I really appreciate you spending the time this morning. I appreciate all the work you're doing out there in the trenches to turn the homeless situation around. You're an incredible resource. As you can tell, the music is coming up. It's time to go. I'm Dave Mazza. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne will be back next week. You all have a good day now.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station, a minute before 9 o'clock. Coming up in an hour, we'll hear Between the Covers with host Lisa Loving. Actually, Air Cascadia is off today at 10 o'clock, and instead we're going to have an hour-long version of Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11, we'll hear Between the Covers with host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Cole Cohen, author of a new memoir entitled Headcase, My Brain and Other Wonders. And then at 11:30, it's The Film Show with host Jen Chavez and SW Concert. Today's guests are Ariella Migdal of the American Civil Liberties Union and their Women's Rights Project. Then artists Craig Winslow and Michael Ackerman talk about Projecting West, their upcoming cross-country odyssey, broadcasting video along the way. Plus, we'll hear about Oliver Quintanilla's new documentary, Little Saints, about psilocybin mushrooms. That is all coming up this morning on KBOO. But up next, it's Press Watch with host Teresa Mitchell. Get all the news you're not supposed to know next on KBOO.
KBOO is proud to partner with Hopworks Urban Brewery for their Community Tap program. Every month, Hopworks features a local nonprofit organization, and May's Community Tap is your community radio, KBOO. Hopworks is located at 2944 Southeast Powell.